Hey everybody, Coach Jonathan here with a series of special podcast episodes this week, a whole series of athlete interviews with a professional race team and one that we are sponsoring. It's a big move for us because we've never sponsored a team before like this, but we're pretty excited about it. And it is the Stans Pivot Pro team presented by Maxis. So that's Chloe Woodruff, that's also Sophia Gomez Villafane, Keegan Swenson, and Rose Grant. And that's actually the order in which you will be hearing these podcasts over the next 4 days. We sat down with them at the Sea Otter Classic, and we talked to them specifically about their race prep. We asked them very similar questions in the beginning, and then we put out the call on our forum, forum.trainerroad.com, for specific questions for these athletes, also on our Instagram channels. And you submitted some questions, so we took some of their precious time to ask some of those questions as well. I gained some unique insight and some cool things that I'm going to put into practice in my race preparation, everything from evening before, all the way through to sleep hacks, to morning routines, breakfast, how to get in the zone mentally, logistics of getting to the race and warm up, all that stuff. And I'm excited to put these into practice myself. So I hope you enjoy it. Today's episode is with Chloe Woodruff. She is the founder of the team. She's genuinely a legend in cross-country mountain biking in the United States. She's awesome. She's an Olympian. She is a national champion. She's always at the front in whether it's the Epic Rides Fat Tire Crits, whether it's in the Epic Rides Backcountry Races, whether it's at the Pro XCTs or in the World Cup. She's commonly the top placing American. She is incredibly knowledgeable and experienced, and also runs her own race team while doing all of this. So with no further ado, enjoy this interview with Chloe Woodruff and stay tuned for tomorrow's episode with Sophia. All right, time for your interview here, Chloe.
Hi, yep.
Chloe Woodruff, I'm going to run through like the list of, I guess, accolades really quick so then people can understand, get a point of reference.
Sure.
Multi-time national champion, correct? You have, in terms of World Cup results, I think you have a world, you're regularly up in top, you're top American finishing a lot of the time with World Cups. What's your best World Cup finish to date?
I was sixth at St. Anne in 2016.
It's impressive.
I'm still working on a top 10 in Europe, though.
So. That's the hardest XC course, a lot of people say. Mont St. Anne.
St. Anne, yeah, but I love it.
I really want to ride that course.
Yeah, it's...
You started the Stans Pivot team presented by Maxis.
I did. Mm-hmm.
And you still manage the team.
Yep, I do.
And then you race for the team.
I do, yeah.
Which I bet some people are probably feeling some sort of point of reference at this because they're like, hey, like, you know, I have a career, I have a racing, you know what I mean?
A lot of people don't know I do a lot of that work behind the scenes. And it's interesting when you race as a pro athlete, a lot of people don't think you work at all. So.
Right. Yeah, they just think that like all you do is ride your bike.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're guilty of like propagating that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
At times we're like, yeah, I mean, if I was a pro, I'd just sit up with my legs all day, then I'd train, and then I'd sit up with my legs.
An Instagram photo like, oh, hard day in the office, like beautiful trail, and you know.
But. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a whole lot to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna go through some questions that have been submitted from podcast listeners, but then we're also first things first. We're gonna kind of get to your race prep for. We're at Sea Otter, the Sea Otter Classic, right now. They had a UCIHC race, which that means like the oars category, higher level of competition, right? And it was a traditional like XCO race. And we're going to run through your race prep and kind of the same questions with all the teammates. So then we can see like different things that people do. So then we'll have lots of things to try and hopefully be better. So first things first, night before the race, I don't know if you were able to like have your favorite dinner that you usually have before race.
You know, I'm really happy eating a lot of different things before before race dinner. But you know what? At team events, we always do a team dinner together. So we've kind of all settled into, you know, cooking and meal prep together. But, you know, we're a mile from Costco. So we went and picked up the $4.99 rotisserie chicken.
Nice.
Which is, I can, like, it's one of the best finds anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so we just had chicken, some rice, and lentils. And it was even, the lentils were, like, in a pre-made package.
Yeah.
And we had a couple of those, toss them in the rice. And then
super
a little salad.
Make. That's easy to make.
Oh, it was one of the easiest dinners to prep. So we wanted, you know, there's a lot going on at Sea Otter. So it was, like, just, we want to be efficient. And it was Good.
So if you had your choice and you could have any pre-race meal, is there a specific one? You said you're flexible, which is something that I feel like I need to improve on, because then you can have any meal you want. But is there one that in particular you like most pre-race?
I just love burritos, like any style of burrito, bowl or burritos, rice and beans and chicken and some sort of salsa and cabbage mixed in.
Yeah.
That would be my go-to.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So sleep the night before the event. I know that there's some research out there where they say that, like, you know, the night before doesn't matter as much as two nights before or whatever else. I personally disagree with that, at least in my own experience. If I get a bad night's sleep, I just don't do well. What do you do anything? Because you sleep in like crazy varying circumstances as a racer. You go from one, you know, Airbnb or hotel, yeah, or sleeping in the van even, or, mm-hmm, you know, in a host housing. Do you do anything to help yourself sleep better?
I mean... I've really focused on sleep hygiene and that like establishing a nighttime routine to help you wind down. And what I go through is really, I think, starting to become like standard, yeah, advice, you know,
yeah,
everyone's talking about sleep now. And I come from someone who never had much of a sleep routine, has had probably, you know, periods of pretty bad insomnia, a lot of issues with sleep. So establishing a routine has been like a chore for me, like sometimes serious work, and then I'm pretty strict about my environment now too. So I really like having a cool room. I sleep with windows open at night. Like at home, I set my thermostat usually to like low 60s.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, eye mask and earplugs. I really try not to have my phone in my room at all.
Ooh,
that's hard for a lot of people, yeah, but like, I like to have that calm when I wake up and before I go to bed, and my phone, like, you can't control what pops up sometimes, you, yes, know? So, you know, so I try to keep my phone out of the room. And then I read and I journal, and journaling sometimes it's simply writing a to-do list for the next day. Like whatever it is in your mind, that's like, you just need to like put down on a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
So just get it, you know, do something about it at that time, so then you can, you know, take care of it the next day.
That process of like manifesting or externalizing your thoughts that you have like that outside of yourself, yeah, in a spot where you can see like, oh, that, yeah. Yeah. I feel like helps clear the mind.
Yeah. And even earlier in the day, like I don't do really afternoon coffee anymore. So yeah.
Makes a big difference. I feel like, especially when you're talking about like dealing with cumulative training load,
yeah,
like one thing adding on top of another and another, oh,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like anything, it's just, you know, creating a new habit, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's a lot of just, you know, just the discipline of it every day. And I struggle with that. So,
yeah. Yeah. We all do.
You know, it's a work in progress. But yeah. But this year, you know, recently my sleep has been a lot better. And I don't get like, I don't ever stay up late at night like worried about my race the next day, and I think maybe that's come with experience, you know, but yeah.
Morning routine, mm-hmm, how about that? Do you have something that you or do you have a routine that you stick to, or specific things that you do every morning?
Yeah, coffee first.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, coffee, yeah, first. Yeah, I like to hand grind my coffee. I've got like a little pour over thing. I enjoy my morning coffee. I listen to like a news podcast, like a 15-minute news podcast in the morning. Race morning's not a whole lot different than other mornings, actually.
Nice.
So, you know, usually there's more, you know, I have a time frame in place a bit more, but
yeah.
Yeah, you know, and then get to work on breakfast, so.
Let's talk about the race breakfast.
Yeah.
We can once again talk about like ideal and then what you did this time. Yeah. What's your typical breakfast that you have before a race?
Oatmeal and an egg. So, yeah.
So does that, and you mentioned this earlier, you actually like cook the egg in the oatmeal, right?
Yeah, this is something I learned from my USA teammate Aaron Huck,
okay,
like last summer, and it's brilliant because I don't want to make a whole lot of dishes I have to clean up, especially on race day.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just crack an egg in your oats as they're cooking, mix it in, and it kind of gives them like a kind of a creamier texture.
Oh, brilliant.
It's delicious.
Do you add anything else to it, or just keep it there? Do you add like sugar or anything else?
Sometimes I'll add like chopped dates.
Yeah.
So almond milk. Like I have a little Trader Joe's seed mixture I'll add sometimes, just really whatever looks good and is around, I mix it up.
Nice.
Even on race morning, I know. But I'm not I'm not afraid of, I love cinnamon and oats, and so.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I'm going to do that, the egg thing. That's a good tip.
And if, you know, and like when we're with the team, like Rose usually gets up earlier. She likes to eat before I do.
Yeah.
But we both eat oatmeal. So she makes extra. And in that case, I just like fry my egg separately and then plop it on top.
Ah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's clever. I think I'm going to try that one. What do you do, I guess, after breakfast? And every race is different in terms of the race time. But are you the type of person that prefers to ride to the venue, or are you the type of person that prefers to drive to the venue? Because I feel like amongst athletes, there's like two tribes along those lines.
Yeah, I like to ride if it's practical and it works. So yeah. If we're staying close enough to the venue, and, you know, sometimes drum or mechanic likes to be at the venue super early to be prepared. And if we don't have another vehicle, like Benelli, it was great. You know, we were 2 miles away. It was a really casual ride into the venue. So that worked out well. But if we all have to carpool, then I think we try to get to the venue an hour and a half beforehand. So, yeah. And I don't consider that spin to the venue as part of my warm-up at all.
You keep it separate.
I do, yeah, because usually spin to the venue, and then, you know, usually you hang out for a little while before truly starting your race warm-up.
What do you do to put yourself mentally into the state of the race that needs to happen? Like, I guess you could say getting in the zone. Any tips or tricks or any specific things that you've mentioned or that you found yourself repeatedly doing?
You know, I think it's as boring as it is, it's just like the checklist of things you have to take care of, right?
Yeah.
It's double checking that like your bottles are set. For me, a lot of times it's like, you know, like putting my hair up and my helmet on, your sunglasses on, and like putting your gloves on.
Yeah.
So making sure you've got your tools in your pocket, your gels, you know, I've got my caffeinated gels on one side, the other ones on the other.
Yeah.
Just those like little things that you're checking off, like, you know, okay. Every single one of those steps, you're that much closer to the race start. I've started listening to like a Spotify playlist too.
A consistent playlist?
Yeah. Like just the same and there's songs. Like 9 songs on it, and they're on shuffle, and you know, but when I'm warming up on the trainer, I like listening to some music, and so, but it's just like all those little things.
I found a lot of value from having the same playlist. And like, I know a lot of the songs are like 5 years old at this point, but it's okay. And I find like I'll add to that, sure. But I find like a ton of value in getting to the point where I have like the familiar songs. Cause I feel like I build this relationship with that song where I'm like, okay, this song gets me in the zone, you know? Yeah. You don't have to have like a playlist that's constantly updating. How about the warm up? That part of things. You were warming up on the Feedback Sports Omnium.
Yeah.
That's the trainer you usually
use. Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah. Do you have a specific routine that you follow? What is the structure?
Usually 20 minutes. Okay. So I keep it short. Yeah. I like to be efficient about things. Don't mess around. You know, so I will spin anywhere from 6 to 10 minutes, just super easy, just, you know. Just get blood moving a little bit. 6 minutes at tempo. And like first minute, I work pretty hard just to get up into the heart rate zone.
Yeah.
So you're kind of punching that first minute and then settling into pace. And then I do 3 minutes at threshold.
Okay.
And same thing, you're punching that first minute. So, you know, actually power wise, usually over threshold, and you kind of settle back into that effort.
Yeah.
So 3 minutes there and cool down for 1 or 2 minutes depending on time, and you know, and then it's like, you know, and I usually like keep my helmet on and like you know, it's just
be
short.
Ready to go.
So and I try to, you know, time it so I don't have a whole lot of time you know, between when I get off the trainer and move on over to the start line.
Are you strict with the time in between those efforts in your warm-up, or do you just let how you feel kind of govern how long it will take for you to get from one effort to the next?
It's one ramping effort.
So you just continue to ramp the whole
way. Yeah. So I go from easy spinning to tempo to threshold. It's just one big ramping effort.
Got it. And then you keep that ramp rate, I guess, consistent. Like you might not go like one day you're like, I'm going to spend a little more time here and then move up.
No, I don't second guess it much. If it's a really hot day,
Yeah.
I will even shorten my warm up a bit, or I make sure I've got, you know, a cool bottle. Like, there's extra steps involved when you're in the heat, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's simply too hot to be on the trainer, which sometimes it just is.
Yes.
you know, then there might be a little extra time just finding somewhere where you can go and kind of get the efforts that you need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You also, I've seen you do practice starts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I never thought to do, strangely, with cycling or mountain biking until I saw you doing that. I used to do them, of course, all the time with dirt bike racing back in the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, never thought of doing it with cycling. Can you tell me what your practice starts are like, how you do them, like the whole process?
Yeah, I don't always do them, but if it's a track where, if I have a question over, okay, what gear do I want to start in? Mm. You know, if I really look at the starting chute and think about surface conditions, like, hey, where do I ideally want to be lining up?
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I'll look at that stuff during my pre-ride, but even, you know, in the minutes before you're lining up and getting called up, you know, it's not a bad idea to revisit that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and also it's, and sometimes it can also be finishing up your workout. So
right.
I like to be, I got to start on the front of World Cups twice last year.
Pretty awesome.
And there's a couple photographs of me.
Yeah.
Probably the, you know, and I do not look very quick off the line. And so I was like, oh man, if you race at the, you know, if you're racing and getting called up at the front line of a World Cup, you don't want to be that person that someone doesn't want to line up behind.
Right.
So, and I think it was just a lot of nerves because I'm pretty quick at domestic races, but so this year I definitely wanted to make sure I was like practicing a little extra because I don't want to blow it again.
Right.
So
it's good.
And it's like right off the line.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so.
Well, slow for you is very different for most of us. So.
Well, yeah. And I, you know, and I like starts and I have to say, okay, this is another thing, but one of my pet peeves.
Yeah.
I put my front wheel on the line.
Yes.
I don't budge from it.
Yeah.
But some people, like minutes ago, they start rolling up.
Yes.
And then suddenly their bars are like 3 inches, 4 inches in front of yours. And it's like this. So that annoys me. And my approach to that is I'm going to beat them off this line.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, this is irritating me right now.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do about it is I'm going to fast starter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Start
just
faster.
Just going to snap on them, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a, so when you say you put your wheel on the line, you're talking like front wheel doesn't pass that line.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. You see that all the time. Like whenever they roll the tape away in World Cups, it's like everyone starts to creep. It just happens, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. So I guess really quickly, how'd the race go for the HC race this time?
Yeah, I finished in sixth.
Nice job. Stacked field.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, I mean, by all means, it was a solid day for me. But I raced most of the day by myself. And if you're racing Sea Otter cross country by yourself, you've done something wrong. So, you know, and I think what it came down to is I had too many accelerations that weren't necessary, like on that first lap.
Yeah.
And when it really counted, I got popped from the group, you know, on the second lap. And, you know, I needed a little bit extra punch at that time to stick in there.
Right.
And instead I rode by myself like 15, 20 seconds off Sophia and Catherine.
Got it.
All day.
Yeah. Just got it like right there.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Jeff Kabush tactic. He like intentionally does that. Crazy guy. I don't know how he managed.
Well, sometimes, you know, I think that I like to be efficient and sometimes I'll let that, you know, like I know I can ride some of the descents faster. So
you're like, you'll probably maintain like a smoother average speed or maintain more momentum through a certain section.
So like I know I can let a little bit of a gap go.
Yeah.
Because I am confident, you know, I can get that gap up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can, you know, get back up there pretty quickly without having to pedal extra.
Yeah.
But where that can backfire too sometimes if
pretty quickly yourself gapped off. Cool. Well, let's go through some questions that people have submitted, some podcast listeners. First one is, so this one came in, says, how'd you deal with the stress of university riding your bachelor's and training in racing? And she says, in this case, I myself am close to graduating, and funny enough, stress and uncertainty management seem to be more demanding than I would have thought.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, I mean, whatever the life change is, you know, whether you're planning for it, anticipating it, like something like a graduation, it's going to be stressful.
Yeah.
I was in school a while ago, and I think how I handled things back then is really different than how I would do things now. I think the main thing is just learning how to prioritize.
Yeah.
You know, and prioritizing for real, which means you have to be able and willing to give things up. So, you know, school was really, you know, was the focus when I was in school, and I always kind of went and fell back on that. I think it's okay to do less, but you can't, you know, I mean, nobody can do it all, right?
Right.
So you have to be willing to, you know, give up training volume. You have to be willing to, you know, just put whatever first, you know, whatever it is you prioritize, you have to be willing to put first, which means giving up other things. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
If training takes a backseat for it, it's okay, right?
Racing is not now or never.
Right.
Everyone develops on a different curve, and, you know, like, yeah, you can't have an attitude that this is, you know, it's now or never.
Yeah.
I think it's better to have kind of more the long picture in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. This one's from, and who knows, because they're forum names. Joelson, I have no clue, but for Chloe, Prescott is one of my favorite places. Pronounced Prescott, not Prescott.
Okay. He knows what he's talking about.
I'd love to hear her perspective on the local trail development and how the community has embraced the mountain biking tourism. That's a spot that I actually just went through for the first time last year, and I was thoroughly impressed by it. And that Prescott area, that whole spot.
Yeah.
Tell me about it in terms of, like, I guess how it shaped you as a rider, really, is what we're getting at with that.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I think the Epic Rides Whiskey Off-Road has done a lot to put Prescott on the map, not only because of the event, but just as a riding destination.
Yeah.
I never would have gone to Prescott without, without that race. So that's what brought me up there for the first time. I lived there for a few weeks before the whiskey in 2013 and ended up buying a home that year and moving up there. So, you know, my opinion is there's no better place to live and train than Prescott.
What's the elevation there?
We're at 5,500 feet.
That's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, elevation-wise, it's great. We have, you know, relatively mild winters. You can really train and mountain bike year round.
The trails stay mostly dry.
We have a lot of decomposed granite, which drains well. Oh, so nice. People get really cranky if you can't mountain bike for like 4 days in a row. So puts it in perspective.
Yeah, different than what we experience in Reno. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, trail access is almost seems unparalleled to me. The city of Prescott, the Prescott National Forest have collaborated on a bunch of different trail projects, and then there's a bunch of there's a few nonprofit groups as well that have been really active, and you know what they've achieved is I think it's really unique, and Prescott is continuing to build incredible trail networks. We have a new area called Storm Ranch Trails, Spence Basin. My opinion, there's some of the best places to ride just about anywhere. So
that's pretty cool. We just drove through and stopped through and checked it out, and then we didn't ride. We were on our way to Sedona. Now I feel like we should actually stop in Prescott.
Yeah, and you know, Sedona's nearby, and Sedona is, you know, definitely more of a destination, but Prescott has more terrain that can serve more skill levels and kind of a greater variety of riders.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. This one, what's your favorite place to ride? Is it Prescott indeed, or could you pick a different spot perhaps other than Prescott? Nothing's like home, right?
I know. Yeah. I'm definitely biased, but I love riding in Tucson as well. Yeah. So I lived down there for a while.
Oh, cool.
I love true desert mountain biking. I mean, it just makes you tough, and you know, it's a beautiful place, and yeah.
It's cool down there. The trails, our first experience down there was 24 hours in the old Pueblo this year, and it was really cool. It was eye-opening.
Yeah.
Because we'd heard a lot about the trail, but it's so much fun.
It's the topography, forgive me, lends itself to a really fun, flowy trail.
Absolutely.
It's pretty cool. Favorite post-win indulgence? That's another question. So like, or post-success, whatever you deem success.
I was going to say, I don't win all that often.
As bike racers, we don't, right?
Yeah,
that's,
that's bike racing. But you have to, you always celebrate something.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say podium champagne. I mean, that's like an easy one, but... Chocolate? It's like always chocolate on this team. It's just such a consistent answer. If anyone says, I bet Rose and Sophia will probably mention chocolate at some point in their podcast.
So. I'm sure. Are you a dark chocolate person?
I am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How dark? What's your favorite percentage?
Oh, like 70, in the 70 range. So I'm maybe less of a purist than some people, but
Nice. Okay. And then this is going to be the final question here. Looking back at how you've trained from the beginning of your race career to now, what's something that you do now with frequency, or you do it regularly, that you really wish that you would have done more of in your training? Could be your recovery regime, whatever else it is. What's something that you do regularly now that you wish you would have done more of, or back in the day with training?
Strength and skills.
So not just the fitness side.
I think consistency in the gym. So working on mobility, strength, just a lot of kind of rehab. And then, and then skills work. And not necessarily, like running drills, but having targeted time on the bike where you kind of, are there to work on, something specific. So, and it oftentimes it's a short period of time, whether it's like 30 minutes, I'm going to work on cornering. I'm going to work on, pumping through sections. I'm going to work on, whatever it is, like bunny hops or something.
Yeah. I feel like we need to somehow erase this, because we all feel weird just playing around on our bicycles as adults. Like, you know what I mean? But we shouldn't feel weird about it. But we kind of do. Like, we should go to the park and work on track stands in the grass where we have less fear, maybe. Or, work on skills in spots where, we may feel weird as an adult doing that. But I feel like we need to get over it. Because, like you said, you may just be working on one specific thing. But
well, and the way around that, right, is to find, young riders to go,
Yeah, there you go.
Teach, right?
Yeah, you're teaching air quotes.
You know, because that's the best opportunity to learn. Right. Yeah, is when you're trying to demonstrate something or.
Yeah, so, and you're helping people.
Exactly.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Chloe. I appreciate this. We'll be racing, or you'll be racing in a couple days here. This is at the time of this recording. And you'll be racing, I guess, technically, once again, air quotes being used, long course.
Yeah.
but a pretty short race, but that's going to be a hard one. So it'll be interesting to see how that one turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Best of luck.
Thank you.
I'm excited to check in with you at different events throughout the year. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
And then hopefully podcast listeners can jump in on this too.
All right.
And follow you along. Where can people find more about you, follow you on social channels, that sort of stuff?
Instagram at Chloe Woodruff.
Cool.
Yeah, that's probably the best spot.
Cool.
I'm on Facebook. I'm still on Facebook, too.
Yeah,
so you can find me there.
Yeah, I'm there, too.
Cool. All right.
Thanks, Chloe.
Yeah, thank you.